your best and leave the rest to God. This is a concluding meeting of the semester. And I thought that this topic would be very relevant to all of you, to give you a boost in your studies during the preparatory leave. Also, 90% of you here are already connected to base and practicing. Maybe a few of you have come for the first time to our temple here. How many of you have come first time today? Oh, good number. Thank you. Okay. So, many of you are already practicing chanting Hare Krishna. How many of you are chanting Hare Krishna every day? Practically 99.9%. Okay. How many of you are yet to begin chanting and meditation? Till now you have not yet started chanting? About 10 or 20. Okay. So, I hope that this lecture inspires you to begin chanting. So, by the end of the lecture today, you will surely understand how practicing spirituality or practicing Krishna consciousness, it practically helps us in our everyday life. We will also come to see that. Often, spiritualists are thought of to be escapists, and spiritualists are thought of to be people who talk of some times of the world. But today's discussion will help you to appreciate how practicing spirituality practically comes to help in your everyday life. Yes, Sundarabhu, ready? But karmanyeva adhikaraste mafaleshu kadachana ma karma phala hetur bhur ma te sangostva karmani. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. Never consider yourself the cause of the results of your activities, and never be attached to not doing your duty. So there are four instructions Krishna gives in this shloka. First he says, you have a right to perform your prescribed duty. That's the first instruction he says. So Krishna here says that every one of us should do our prescribed duty. What is our prescribed duty? In Bhagavad Gita itself, Lord Krishna says, karma brahmod bhavam viddhi brahmakshara samudbhavam. In the Vedas, the prescribed duties are given for everyone. In the Vedic times, the Gurukul teacher and the parents would try to understand the inclinations of a boy. They would try to understand the tendencies and inclinations and accordingly find out in which category he belongs to. Like even a name-giving ceremony of the child, you know, they would keep a Bhagavatam, they would keep some gold and silver, they would keep different items for the child to pick up. So if the child is picking up gold and silver, he has a Vaishya tendency. If he's picking up Bhagavatam, he has a Brahmana tendency. Or if he's picking up a knife or something, then he has a Kshatriya tendency. So they will try to find out, not only for a young child, but as the child grows up, and allow the child to flow in the direction of his inclination and the tendency to do work. So the prescribed work was very easily known in the Vedic times. So all would go to the Gurukul, and for a period of time the spiritual teacher would see the tendencies of the boy and accordingly train them in vocational fields also. So everyone learns Shastra, basic Shastra they all learn. But then if one has a Kshatriya tendency, he is trained more in Kshatriya line. Somebody has Brahmana tendency, is trained more in Brahmana line, like that. According to their tendencies and inclinations. And in this way one would emerge very successful in their field. Why? Because they have made a choice of a field where they can shine, where they have shown a bent of mind. So naturally they flourish also. So the prescribed duties are very well known. But in the modern times, the question may arise in your mind, what is my prescribed duty? So many of us, we have, if you see in the modern day situation, people often go for the crested jewel professions of engineering and medicine. Often. You know, people prefer avoiding going for arts and sciences or commerce and things like that. Or even if one goes in commerce, then one has to become a chartered accountant. If you don't come to that point of chartered accountant, then you are not so much respected in the society. So, we can take this as our prescribed duty, that all of you are students, you can take this college studies as a prescribed duty. Ideally speaking, simply doing work is not considered prescribed duty. Simply doing any education is not considered prescribed duty. Because if you see the Vedic life, the Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, they would do their duty, but the duty was connected to God also. Like the Brahmana would learn the scriptures and preach it for the benefit of the masses. And Kshatriya would become a king, but he would be guided by the Brahmana in a religious manner, how to give protection to women, children, old people, and how to be subordinate to your guru and worship God, like that. And the Vaishya would do trading, farming, cow protection, and whatever wealth he earns, he would be using it for the benefit of the other three classes. So that way, every one of them were properly engaged in a spiritual service. But in the modern times, people are just doing only the work, and they have no connection to God. So in this session, you will come to see how a lack of contact with God brings about trouble, or brings about only problem in life. By taking the studentship as your prescribed duty, like all of you are now students in a college, you are doing your studies. So currently this is your prescribed duty, so you have to do your studies. So there are two duties. One is the conditional duty, another one is constitutional duty. Constitutional duty means constitutionally all of us are not these material bodies. This material body is simply a vehicle. Who are we? We are spirit soul. So the soul has a duty towards God in the spiritual world. So that is called as constitutional duty. And conditional duty means currently you are put under a condition where you have a mother, you have a father, you have a family, you are in a society, you are put in certain conditions. And you are a student in engineering college. So that is a conditional duty. So college study is certainly a conditional duty because that is not your eternal duty. That is a temporary conditional duty. But you have to fulfill both the duties to be happy in life. In fact, Krishna condemns irresponsibility in Bhagavad Gita. He says in Bhagavad Gita, Sharira yatra pichate na prasidye dakarmanaha. He says, if a person does not do his work in this world, he cannot even fill up his belly, he can't even earn his livelihood. How can he survive? So if anybody is not doing a job or not doing any service in this world, but simply earning his livelihood by begging. Sometimes you see outside the temples there are people sitting, beggars, begging and eating, and they are not doing any work. So Krishna condemns that. He says that sharira yatra pichate. Even for the maintenance of the body, one has to do some work in this world. In fact, he says, shariram kevalam karma kurvan napnoti kilbisham. If you are doing work for maintaining body and soul together, such a work is not sinful, he says. So, why the sin comes into picture here? Because if one is greedy or encroaching upon others' property, then it becomes sinful. But if one is doing work and one is offering a portion of the fruits of his work to God and living a simple life, then such a work is not something that leads one to sin. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna encourages one to give up irresponsible behavior in society and come to the stage of doing one's duty. That comes in the second chapter. In fact, Arjuna, you all know in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, was foregoing his duty. He put his Gandiva bow down and sitting in the chariot and weeping, not ready to do his duty. And Arjuna said, I would rather go for begging outside instead of killing my own relatives and friends. So at that time Krishna says, what is the importance of duty? He says, akirtim chapi bhutani katayishyanti te vyayam sambhavitasya chakirtir maranad tirichyate. He is saying, Arjuna, akirtim chapi bhutani katayishyanti te vyayam. If you don't do your duty, whole world will laugh at you. And people will call ill names to you that a kshatriya has foregone his duty and is going for taking bhiksha. And besides that, even if you go for bhiksha, if somebody does not give you some arms, because of your kshatri nature, you will become angry and you will take a sword to kill them. A brahmana, if he is not given arms, he will go away. He doesn't take it seriously. But a Kshatriya, as a Kshatriya, you will want to kill them. So he said, your duty is not to simply take a begging bowl and beg. In the same way, like all of you are all practicing Krishna consciousness, there is a kind of tendency in some of the students who take to Krishna consciousness to ignore their college studies in the name of Krishna consciousness. Sometimes they say, oh, now that I have become a devotee, my material studies are boring. I don't have any taste for them. That is like garbage for the crows. Now I am like a swan now. I am tasting higher taste from Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. So Krishna does not appreciate that. He says in Bhagavad Gita, he tells Arjuna that you have to do your duty. Swadharmam api chaviksha navikampitum arhasi. He says that. One should do one's duty. One cannot escape one's duty. Why? Because we are not in a... We will be seeing towards the end of this session about who can forego duty. That's another question. But at least all of you at the moment, you cannot forego your duty. You have to do your duty of doing your studies. Now, when we are doing our duty of studies, now all of you are going to have your preparatory leave and then you are going to have your examination. You can show the next one, next slide. Why do people become anxious and tense about doing a thing? See, I have written a thing because it can be an examination or it can be a sports game or it may be a musical performance on the stage or it may be a elocution competition. So every one of you as a student will be put in a situation where you have to perform some challenge. Like you have to perform an examination or you have to give a performance on stage or in sports or things like that. So I have written a word, a thing. So why do people become anxious and tense about doing anything in life? As it is given here, one of the first things is worry about the result. Isn't it? We always worry about the result because there is an equal chance of emerging successful or becoming a failure. There is always a chance. People often call it as a good luck or a bad luck. And some people call it destiny or fate. So there is always an inner fear. What will happen? If it is examination now, for example, before the exam there is a lot of tension. There are people who, till the examination hall, they will be carrying a notebook or some papers. Till the last moment they will be seeing the papers and bell will ring and still they will not enter the hall. They will be reading for 5-10 minutes and then they will drop the notebook and go in. And then there is great tension. How the paper is going to be. And whether I will pass or not, what if I will fail. So there is a worry about the result. And sometimes people worry that even if I do well, you know, sometimes by bad luck, the result may be bad. So there is a kind of fear. And besides that, after you perform the examination, you have to wait for the result. It may take 6 weeks or it may take 3 months or whatever. So during the period of time also there is tension in the heart. What is going to be the result? Because the result is currently unknown to you. And the result may be good or may be poor. So people are waiting with bated breath how the result is going to be. And especially if you haven't fared well in the exam, there is always fear, what will the parents say? You see, there are pressures in the modern times from various quarters. Like there is a peer pressure from the friends. Like the friends always, friends pull you in both directions. They want you to go with them for the movies and parties. At the same time, if you get poor marks, they keep all the time prodding you and criticizing you sometimes, especially close friends. Similarly, there is a competition also. There is a cutthroat competition. So we become very fearful. In one of the colleges, they were telling me, out of some 300 students, more than 150, 180 of them did not pass. They had at least a paper fail. So nowadays, sometimes you see people failing in large numbers like that. And besides that, the competition is becoming higher and higher now. Like for the CAT examination, I heard 1,75,000 people appear, out of which there are only 700 seats in the IIMs, including fellowships, all over all the IIMs. So you can see the ratio, how difficult is the competition. So because of that, also, sometimes people lose confidence, or sometimes there is a kind of great tension that people feel. And besides that, they also know that there are so many people around waiting with big, big expectations from you. parents are waiting and they keep calling you, how was today's paper? How was the examination? Did you do well? So parents keep calling and they are asking you, when is the result coming? So you know that there are many people waiting to see your results. So their expectations create fear in your heart. Oh, they have so much expectation, but I don't have any talent. Many times you have fear. So because of all these things, when you are waiting for the result, there is a kind of anxiety that is created. Next. When do we worry about the result? This is a very interesting thing you can see. We worry about the result even before we do the act. Even before we go for the exam, we think, here I have given the example of a tournament for a sportsman or a sportswoman. Will I be able to beat my opponent today? So there is a tension in the heart. And then now we are playing. While playing also there is a constant tension. Whether I am going to lose or I am going to win. And then after you win, although you have won, you are not so happy now because you have a fear. That first round I have won, I don't know about the second round, whether I'll win or not. So in this way, before doing the act, and while doing the act, and even after doing the act, you will see that there is always a kind of tension one feels. One of the basketball coaches called us, John Wooden, he made a very profound statement. He said, do not allow what you cannot do interfere with what you can do. So we will see, when you are trying to give some performance, constantly the worry about the result keeps interfering in the performance. And naturally the performance is lowered. Certainly the performance is not very high. That means it stops you from performing with your full energy. It constantly keeps coming in between. Just like, say you are going in a car, and there is a person cycling in front of you and is going like a snake, like this. And is going very, very slow. So how will you be able to drive the car? You can easily see that your driving of the car is naturally impeded. Because you are afraid that any time you will come and fall on my way and it will cause an accident. You are fearful. In the same way, if the worry about the results keeps interfering in the performance of your activity, then naturally that becomes the cause of your losing the good result that you are anticipating. So why are you so tense? It is only because you are so concerned about the result. You see, this is very interesting. Why are you so much in tension? Because you want good result. That is your goal. But that very desire to achieve that goal keeps interfering with your performance and hampers you in achieving that goal. See the fun. How interesting it is. It is only because you want a good result, you are actually focusing on that. But still the very same thing becomes the cause of your bad performance. Next. What does tension and worry do to us? We worry because we are keen to do well. But what we don't realize is the biggest enemy of doing well is the very tension and worry. What does it do? It paralyzes our body and mind without our knowledge and prevents us from doing well. We call it as brooding over. Brooding over means, there are three words used in the Shastra. Shoka, Moha, Bhaya. Every living being in this world is subjected to these three things. Shoka is the lamentation. Sometimes, like now you have the PL now. Sometimes people think about the past. In the last 2 years, you see my result and I have got just 52%. I don't know whether I'll be able to, get a first class ever. So like that you lament about the past. And you are at the illusion about the present. And bhaya means fear for the future. Shoka, moha, bhaya, three things. You have fear about the future. You are in illusion about the present because you foregoing your duty, you are simply dwelling on so many other things which are not your priority. So shoka, moha, bhaya, all these things are afflicting everyone in this world. As long as one does not know about God, as long as one does not know how to control mind and senses, such a person will be constantly tormented by these three things. Shoka, moha and bhaya. Lamentation, illusion and fear of the future. So one is the past, one is present and third one is the future. Shoka, moha and bhaya. So what do these things do? This acts like a mental cancer. mental cancer means when there is a cancer in the body, it gradually eats you up. It gradually starts spreading over a period of time, causes so much intense excruciating pain and kills the person. Similarly, this kind of unnecessary worry about the future, worry about the result, worrying about the past, it kills your energy, it kills your time, it kills your spirit. It basically kills everything. And it does a great damage to you. And many students have experience of this. Like you open the book to study, but instead of studying, you are worrying whether I should, now I am in second year now, when I go to third year or fourth year, now should I do CAT or should I do GATE or should I do GRE, TOEFL? My parents want me to go abroad, but I want to be here in India. I'll better join a big software company and earn a lot what I would be earning abroad. Mind keeps constantly giving suggestions. Why didn't you try this? Why didn't you try that? Although those things are not at all relevant to you right now, at the moment. Is it relevant to you at the PL time? Preparatory time? But that kind of thing keeps paralyzing our body and mind without our knowledge. And because of this, we don't do our duty. That is the reason why many people have experience that even when they do night out, they have hardly studied anything. Yeah, they say that I did night out, like sometimes people start sitting at 10 o'clock at night and morning 4 o'clock they, get up from their seat and they go to their neighbor and say, today I did night out. Whole night I was awake. But whether you did night out or not is another question. But what did you do? How did you, how much you studied? What have you grasped? What have you accomplished? Hardly anything. Probably must have done one paragraph. You haven't gone ahead. The light is on, fan is on, door is open, dog is coming in and going out. But you are flat on the table. Sometimes you are dozing and sleeping. Sometimes you are awake also. You are like in a state of hallucination. You are practically not absorbed in the studies. So it is not the quantity of hours you put in. It is the quality of time. It's the quality with which you perform your duty. And the quality will come only when you are able to escape from this unnecessary tension and worry. Next. So how can we stay cool and succeed without worry and tension? So how can we do that? So there are two things in this, two components. Doing our best and leaving the rest to God. So we are going to see these two things a little elaborately. So this is what the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita. This is Bhagavad Gita philosophy. Doing our best and leaving the rest to God. There is a verse in Bhagavad Gita where Lord Krishna tells Arjuna, Tasmatvam uttishta yasho labhasva jitva shatrun bunshva rajyam samriddham mayaiva yete nihita purvameva nimittamatram bhavasavya sachin. This verse became world renowned verse, most famous verse. People quote this verse very often. Nimittamatram bhavasavya sachin. My dear Arjuna, you simply become my nimitta. You simply become my instrument, Krishna says. Tasmatma muttishta ishola. Stand up, wake up and perform your duty and attain all glory, he says. Bungshwa, Shatrun, Raja Samritam. He says that you will be very easily able to defeat all your enemies. Why? Because I have already killed them all. Dronamcha, Bhishmamcha, Jayadratamcha. I have killed all of them. Bhishma, Drona, everyone, I have already done it. But you become an instrument and you perform your duty. And I am behind you to help you. So Lord Krishna encourages Arjuna to perform his duty. So here doing one's best means, there are three steps here explained here. As you all know very well this statement, God helps those who help themselves. So what is the first step? Is to do everything you can do by way of hard work and effort. Half of our worries about a thing are because we have not done our best. You see, if one has whiled away one's time during the PL and then you go for the examination, we haven't prepared at all anything. So as soon as you sit for the examination paper, you will see butterflies flying in your stomach. You will see that. Because you haven't prepared anything. So what kind of confidence can you have? So half of our worry comes from not having prepared well. That itself. Which means, doing our best means many things. It means many, many things. One is, first of all, one should plan. If you fail to plan, you are planning to fail, it is said. So many people don't make a good plan how to utilize one's time. So if you don't plan properly, then you are bound to fail. You can't escape. And regularity is also very important. Important, regularity. So we always tell our students in all our bases that the first 3 months, like Jan, Feb, March, or July, August, September, we have a study formula, 10, 13, 16 hours per week they have to study. In the first month they study 10 hours per week, then the second month they study 13 hours per week, third month they study 16 hours per week. So if they are steadily studying, there is nothing to worry. When the PL comes, you will have to just revise the syllabus, that's all. They can go for the examination. So we have to plan, we have to be regular in our practice. And we have to put up our best, which means, we'll come to that point very soon. We should work to our full capacity. On an average, a student can easily study 10-12 hours on a preparatory leave day for the studies. Because you know the business. Actually, when students come to college in the first year, they are quite innocent. When they come to second year, they get into many kinds of other distractions. Like when I was in IIT, I have seen there is a Woodlands Hotel where students used to come and eat at 1 o'clock in the night. So they will say that they are doing night out, but then when they come to the hotel, they spend 2-3 hours there, chit-chatting with students and casually eating idli, sambar and noodles and everything, sitting very casually. So doing our best means working with our full capacity. You have come here to do your studies, prescribed duty of studies. So one should focus on that without getting distracted to other things like watching movies, going for parties, or simply chatting hours and hours, talking about future plans during the preparatory leaves. Or some people will be going for women. Boys become attracted to girls, girls become attracted to boys. They spend time like that. Especially in the PLs, you find after a few days of study, there is a saturation time that comes. You have made lot of plans, and then you find after 1 week or 10 days, you become little tired. And now you feel, I just can't push myself further. I am feeling bored, and every day 10 hours, how can I study? So you end up in sleeping a lot. Either you sleep, or you waste your time in other ways. So, half of our worries about a thing are because we haven't done our best. And as it is said in the second point, since the only thing we have full control over is our action. So we must do our best in all we do. Just like if you take a bow and arrow, as soon as you leave the arrow, do you have any other control over the arrow after that? Once you leave the arrow, it's finished. It's out of your hands now. And you can't do anything. In the same way, when this time, precious time is given to you, that's the only time you have at your own disposal. And how you are planning to use it is in your hands. But once the time is over, then you have to write the examination and you have no control after that. Then the thing is out of your hands, beyond that. So, only then can we hope for good results. Which means, don't be foolishly expecting big results without putting the necessary effort. You heard the saying, no pains, no gains. Yeah. Similarly, there is another saying which says, easy come, easy go, it says. Which means, like, sometimes the gamblers, they get a quick money through lottery or playing in Las Vegas. They get a big money. But you will always see that although they get a big money, they are also big losers. You will see that. Why? A gambler who never wins, in general, he will stop gambling totally. But if a person wins and earns even a little money, he has got the taste of it, just like a man-eater tiger. Once he gets a taste of it, then he'll want to repeat it again and again. And that's how, even if he wins a big lot of money, he will end up spending all that money and he'll become bankrupt and he'll even buy more debts from others and spend that all. You will see that. In this way, he'll only bring misfortune to himself. Similarly, you may find some of your students who don't study throughout the semester and the preparatory leaves, they may just cram the subject or photocopy the notes from other friends and they may go to the exam and vomit it all out and they may get a very good score. And you may think, I haven't succeeded, just look at that person. But when such people go to the company, like I was in our company, I found there were some boys who had come from different colleges and they don't know any of the fundamentals. It is totally empty. So every time they would come for help, and I could clearly see they don't know even basic trigonometry, basic mathematical problems. They don't even have common sense. Because they have just crammed and vomited, that's all. They haven't studied the subject at all. That is why the law of the farm, when we say, when you sow the seed, you can't expect the fruit tomorrow. When you sow the seed, you have to water it. It germinates, it becomes a plant, it grows into a tree, produces flower, and then the fruit. Similarly, those students who steadily study, like those who have studied second year, third year, fourth year nicely, they don't need to prepare separately for gate examination. You don't need any preparation. If you studied your technical, you are good in technical subject, you go and sit and you can crack it very easily. You hardly need any preparation. So, the choice is about how we want to study. Because after you join a company, you will realize, alas, I wasted all my time in the college. And now I don't have any fundus. Now I am working in a company, if people come to know that I am a muff, what will happen? You have to cut a sorry figure many times. Sometimes you have to make a small calculation and you have to go to somebody else for help. So, certainly you have a chance now to not just cram, but utilize your time very nicely and prepare. The only thing we have full control over is our actions now. Third point says something interesting. Your best need not be the best. When we say you should do your best to your full capacity, every one of you assembled here today, you all have different capacities, isn't it? You will see that above you there are many, many people who are far more brilliant. Sometimes in a class, the professor is writing some derivation or equation, and there will be always two or three boys in the class raising the hand and giving the answers, while all others are wondering what are they saying. Everything looks like Greek and Latin. You may be wondering. And everyone knows sure shot that these people are outstanding people. They have some, God has given them special intelligence. They're outstanding. People know that. And they can understand and see things which others cannot see. So that is one of the opulences of God, intelligence. And that fellow is expressing a fraction of it. So sometimes you feel, oh, I'm not so intelligent. Then when you say, do your best, how can I do my best? But then there are also people who are below you. Is it not true? There are certainly people below you. There are certainly people above you. So, and you have a certain capacity. You work according to the fullest of your capacity. Whatever best you can. That's why it is said here, your best need not be the best. So one need not be discouraged. Also, given a page like this, just one page in front of a student, every one of us take different amounts of time to grasp the content of the page. Somebody may take 1 hour to grasp it. Another person may take just 10 minutes. If you associate the ideas and make acronym or something, you can grasp very fastly. That's called as assimilation. So some people very quickly grasp the thing. They understand there are three main themes in this, and each theme says about this, and there are one or two examples for each of it. And they know the content immediately. In 5-10 minutes they can grasp it. Others take a longer time. So if your capacity is less, then naturally you have to work for a longer time, longer number of hours. Doing the best means that also. So these are the things in doing the best. What are the three things? You'll remember? What does the first thing say? Yeah. You have to plan yourself. Plan and be regular and prepare yourself. And only then you should hope for good result. Otherwise don't hope. That's the first thing. Second thing, it says that before you perform, right now the thing is in your hand. You can put your best efforts, that is in your hand. But once you do it, then it is not in your hand. I gave the example of arrow and the bow, isn't it? Similarly, sending the arrow and trying to locate the target, that is in your hand. So, concentrating on the studies well and putting one's full efforts is in your hand at the time. And once the examination is over, then it is not in your hands. And third one is certainly something encouraging. That your best does not mean the best. And every one of us have our own best. And we can try to do that. Yeah. Next. And this is the second component, leaving the rest to God. How can we surrender the worry about the result to God? So there are two sheets in this. This and the next one. You will understand how to leave the rest to God. We should do our best at the same time. How can we leave the rest? See, most of the people in the world are talking about doing the best only. They don't talk about leaving the rest. They only talk about doing the best. There are many positive thinking books. There are many self-help books, which tell you that you should always be a positive thinker. You should never think negatively. Think positively. If you think you can make it, you can make it. And they say it's all a question of psychology, they say. In your psychology, if you think that you can make it, then you can make it. And all you need is just some confidence. But if you carefully take a closer look at the statement, is it enough just to be positive? For example, as I was telling about the CAT exam, now people are writing, if you are just positive but you are not prepared well, can you crack it? What is the meaning of that positiveness? So, doing the best is good, certainly. We should certainly put our best with respect to capacity, with respect to planning, with respect to our regularity, with respect to our sincerity, honesty, not copying in the exam, but honestly preparing and writing. We can do all that. So, five things I told you. Planning, regularity, and honesty, and what is the other one I said? I said two more. Full concentration, with full absorption, full concentration, yeah. After doing all of that, no matter how positive thinker you be, the results are not in our hands. We can see that. So, people foolishly talk about positive thinking, which is actually called as a personality ethic. Personality means superficially you are taught that, like, you know, they say you do this auto-talk, or it's called as auto-suggestion or auto-talk. You say, I'll be successful in the interview. You keep saying to yourself like this. And then you go and you will be successful, they say. You keep imagining that you will be successful and you will make it like that. So, of course, one has to think positively. At the end of the lecture, you will know what is the meaning of actual positive thinking. Positive thinking is not just imagining that I can crack it without doing proper preparation, without doing one's best. Simply imagining that I will be successful, that's not positive. Here, these few sentences will show you, no matter how much you think positively, the results are not in your hands. As it is said here, God is in control of everything, not we. You will see that everything is acting and moving in this world under God's control, not our control. We can see, as the Lord says in the scriptures, Madbhayat Vativatoyam Suryastapati Madbhayat Varshati Indra Dahati Agnir Mithushcharati Madbhayat. He says, Madbhayat Vativatoyam, the wind is blowing out of fear for me. The sun is rising in the morning out of fear for me. And he says, the demigod Indra brings showers out of fear for me. The death is taking its toll out of fear for me. So all these great personalities in the creation, they are all working out of fear for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You will never find sun delaying 1 minute any morning. Every morning you see the sun rising. Millions of years have passed. Have you ever seen the sun failing any day to rise in the east? Sometimes we may get up late for Mangalarati, but the sun never gets up late. He promptly arises because he is under the command of the Lord. And same is true for everything. And you find all around people are dying. The death is taking its toll. Have you ever found that there was a miscalculation due to which somebody is living for 600 years and Yamaraj has forgotten to keep an account and they are going on living and the death did not come to them? You never find that. The person who is supposed to die in time, he dies in time. You will see that. So, everything in this nature is working strictly under God's control. And Krishna says that, Maya Adhyakshena Prakriti. Whole Prakriti is working under my control, the Lord says. And not only the Prakriti in the nature, even our body is controlled by the material nature. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there is a nice verse where Prahlad Maharaj says, how God is in control of everything. He says, we have no control over anything in this world. The modern civilization teaches you that everything is in your fingertips. Mobile is in your fingertips. Computer, initially they had a desktop computer, then they had laptop computer, and then they had palm top computer. Probably in future they have a fingertop also. Isn't it? So they have, so everything is at your fingertips. You can control everything. Don't worry, we will step on moon, we'll fly on sky, we will control everything. Everything is in our grip. So this is the attitude that modern life, modern civilization gives you. But if you take a closer look, you will see, as Prahlad Maharaj says, we are totally controlled. He gives three examples. He says, Balasya neha pitarau, balasya neha sharanam pitarau nrasimha, nartasya chagadamudan patamajyatonam, taptasya pati vidiryai hanjaseshtas, tavad vibho tanubritam, tadupekshitanam. He is saying, my dear Lord Narasimhadev, he is saying, a child who is born with a silver spoon is so well cared by mother and father. And the parents may, as soon as the child is born, calls may fly back and forth. The uncle may come from London. And different relatives come from different parts of the world to see this child, newly born child. And the child happens to be a girl. Sometimes parents immediately put 20 lakhs in the bank for the future of the child. So there are so many people who talk about the child. Child is so much cared for. But sometimes such a child lying on the lap of mother and father, pitiably the child dies. Now they cannot control it. Mother and father, they may love the child, they may try to protect the child, but they cannot protect, he is saying. Balasya naiha sharanam pitarau narsimham. Although the parents are giving shelter to the child, they cannot protect the child. Similarly, he is saying, a very wealthy man may be having lots and lots of money. He may be a jamindar. He may have a big car. Like somebody may be going in a Mercedes Benz, and you may see him and think, this fellow must be really happy. He is going in a special car. But you open the door and ask him, are you happy? He will say, oh, what can I say about my toothache? It is so painful. When he gets a toothache, it is so painful. So Prahlad Maharaj says that sometimes a rich man, he goes to the best of the doctors and buys the costliest medicines. And surrounded by costliest of the medicines, he dies pitiably in the midst of those medicines only. And they don't help him survive at all. Similarly, he says, somebody who is drowning in an ocean, suffocating. He is trying to get a puff of air. He is just drowning in the water. And he is seeing a ship passing by. And he is waving his hands and shouting, help, help, help. But in the loud sound of the high tides of the ocean, none of the people in the boat or the ship are able to hear his voice. The ship is passing by. So there are people in the ship. The ship is not very far, maybe a few meters away. But he doesn't get the help, he pitiably dies. But then he says, all these three people can be saved if the Lord wishes so, that they should be saved. Sometimes a man who is drowning in the water, he finds that a boat is going in some other direction, and it exactly takes a right angle and comes towards him. And he doesn't know how it came towards him. And then they take his hand and they take him into the boat, and he feels so grateful. He says, I would have died today, you saved me. Same thing we can say with our children. Sometimes a child living in a slum, he doesn't have any medicine, he doesn't have mother and father to take care. Sometimes the mother may drop the child into the dustbin. But then later you find that the child grows up and he becomes a grown-up man later on. Still the child does not die, you see. That is why we have to know that God is in control of everyone and everything. And that control is not in our hands. So even our body, we can see, when you are young, you have a hot blood in the body and you feel very fresh. And you feel everything is in your control. When you gradually grow old, you will realize that the body is not functioning according to your will and wish. Body just doesn't cooperate. Like you see the old people, they get uremia, they can't pass urine. They cannot pass the stool, they have obesity. They have to do some enema to remove the stool. Body does not cooperate when one gets old. One undergoes many, many peculiar problems one faces. The body does not cooperate. Similarly, one has to realize that there are many things beyond our control. Everything is not within our reach. So it applies to our studies also. Exam study is in your hand. You can study very nicely. But once written, the results are not in our hands. Sometimes people say there was a computer mistake, computer error. And then you give for reval. And even after giving reval, you don't get anything in return. Huh? And you cry and tell your friends that, you know, I really did well and I don't know why. I got such a poor mark. And you say that I was expecting 80 marks. You know? But, you know, I got 8 marks, I don't know why. You know? And somebody else, your friend was telling that that paper is finished. You know, that's gone. I didn't even appear for 30 marks also. And that fellow ends up getting 70 marks. Sometimes it happens like some computer mistake or whatever. So, things are not in our control. And God's plan is always perfect from small to large things. So, surrendering our result to God means understanding that God is the greatest person and He is in control, and whatever He does to me is for my best. You know this famous story, a man who saw a huge banyan tree. He was lying under the banyan tree, but he saw that the banyan tree fruits were very small. He was saying, God must be crazy, he said. Why? Because you see the creeper which is flowing on the ground level, that has got a huge pumpkin. Whereas this banyan tree is so huge, but the fruits of the banyan tree are so small. Why God is so foolish? He said to himself. Actually, the opposite should happen. The creeper is flowing on the ground with no support, so it should have a small fruit. And the banyan tree is so huge, it should have a big fruit. So that's what he was thinking in his mind. And when he was sleeping, all of a sudden, a fruit from the top fell on his forehead. And it caused such a pain. He jumped up from his sleep. And he saw it was bulged. And then he realized, if this small fruit happened to be like pumpkin, what would have happened? And he said, my head would have cracked to pieces. Then he understood that God always is perfect in His plan. Whatever He does is best. He knows why He has done. You know this coconut tree? See, this coconut tree has got the fruits hanging in the top. But they say, it's said in one of the scriptures that the coconut never falls. The coconut, you have seen the eye of the coconut, any of you have seen? If any of you come from a village, you will know the coconut has got something called as eyes, they call it. They say coconut never falls, but if it falls also, it will fall only when nobody is below the tree. We don't know what kind of coconut psychology is that. But coconut generally, they say, it's like that. There is no history of any coconut falling on anyone's head. You would have never heard a news in the paper ever. So God is always very perfect in His plan. And God knows what is best for our growth, as He is all-loving and all-knowing. So God is actually the source of all love in this world. The love that you experience from your mother and father is a small, tiny fraction of God's love for you. In fact, Dhruva Maharaja's mother told to Dhruva, you want a kingdom greater than your grandfather, my dear child? Nobody in this world can satisfy you, except Lord Vishnu. You better go to forest. And He can provide you not only the kingdom, He can offer you love which is 1,000 times like the love that I am offering you, His mother said. So the love that Lord can give to His devotee is thousands of times more than what a mother can give to the child, she said. So mother herself is saying to the child like that. So God is all loving. He will never want to harm anyone. So sometimes when we get something bad in our life, we think, why this misfortune on me? Why not on others? The problem is, we only see the present isolated from the past and future. We don't know what we did in the past. And we don't know what the future holds for us. We only see the present. And because we see only the present, that's a very limited, narrow vision. We don't know what we have done in the past. What was our karma in the past? Probably in our previous life, we copied from somebody's an examination paper. And although we deserved only, you know, 10 or 20 marks, we got a big distinction, 75, 80 marks. And we went very proudly around and said, I got a distinction. So now God will be angry on you and say that, oh, last lifetime you copied, you are supposed to get 20 and you got 80. Now in this lifetime, even if you don't copy, you write well, you will get 20 now. Yeah. Isn't it? So God knows. Actually, the result of our karma comes surely. Yeah. So we don't know the past. We don't know the future, we only know the present. Because of which we always think that we know what is best for us. This is one foolish ego that many people have. Why God does not know? Probably I think I should inform him. They go to the temple and say, God, please be, informed well of my needs and concerns. I am expecting this much in this paper, that much in that paper or whatever. So people think that they need to inform God, because he may not be probably knowing. Or sometimes God commits mistakes also, people think. Actually, God never makes any mistakes. He knows what is best for you and he knows what you deserve. Like one man was lying in his house, sleeping in the night. All of a sudden a brick fell on his head from the top. And it caused a severe pain to him. And he screamed very loudly. And immediately the neighbors came. And they saw that it's bleeding profusely. They picked him up, immediately put him in an auto. And this fellow was shouting, No, where are you taking me in an auto? Why do you take me to your doctor? Because if you take me to your doctor, he will give me a big bill and I will not be able to pay. It's bleeding little bit, I can just put tincture or something, And they said, no, it's profusely bleeding. Probably we have to do some stitching. And this fellow was all the while he was making noise in the auto, shouting and yelling. Anyway, he was taken to the hospital. And the doctor said it was a deep cut in the head. So he had to put stitch. So he put a stitch. And then while putting the stitch also, this fellow was asking the doctor, Doctor, how much is going to be the bill? Please, I can't pay so much. So anyway, the doctor completed it and then put him in the bed. And he asked the doctor, can I go right now back to my house? No, it's not very late in the night. It's just 11 o'clock now. Please allow me to go back. And the doctor asked, why do you want to go back? Why don't you stay here 2-3 days? I can't pay for the bed. It must be very costly. You must be charging very heavily. And the doctor said, no, it's a nominal charge. And the doctor convinced him to stay. And next day morning, he got a news from his friends that this whole roof of the house collapsed. The whole house collapsed and it was finished. When this man understood that it was God's plan by which he took me out of the house and sent me to hospital, although I was a conjuice, I was a miser. Actually, I was not ready to spend a few thousand rupees. If I forced the people to make me stay at home, probably I wouldn't be alive to enjoy the rest of the wealth that I earned. So, God knows what is best for our growth, because He is all-loving and He is all-knowing. So, He is all-knowing also. That's why He is called as omniscient, isn't it? Omniscient means He is all-knowing. He knows everything about you. He knows your desires better than you. He knows your desires even before you express them to God. That is His greatness. And Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. All of you repeat this verse. Sarvasya chaham hridi sannivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha vedaischa sarvairahameva vedyo vedantakrit Vedantakrit Veda Videvachaham. So he says, Sarvasya Chaham Hridayena Vishto. I am seated in the heart of every living being, in the heart of everyone, as a super soul. We are the soul, and Krishna says he is the super soul. So he is constantly witnessing our activities. He is watching our activities. And he knows what is best for us. And he says, Mattaha Smritir Jnanam Apohanam Cha. It is me who gives you smriti, remembrance. In the examination, sometimes you are not able to remember something. You break your head. Oh, I don't know what was that first word I've forgotten. Or you make acronym and go and you forget the acronym. Like that. So, he says, Matta Snitir Jnanam Apohanam Cha. I give the forgetfulness. I give the knowledge. I give the memory, he says. So, he is all-knowing and he is all-loving. And we should be convinced that what he will do for me is the best course of action for me. So I told you 2-3 examples. Another example comes to my mind. See, these are examples which teach us something that can be practically applied in our life. Because whenever a misfortune comes in our life, we always curse. We curse God, we curse others. We become broken-hearted. So it is certainly good to understand how misfortune can turn into fortune. One man who was swimming in the ocean, actually, he wasn't swimming. He was actually going in a big ship and there was a wreck of the ship and then he was one of the men who was drowning and who could not get any help from anybody. At last he landed in an island. And he picked up the things in the island. He made a cottage by himself and he was living there, somehow surviving on seafood. And then he was waiting for some ship to come. Please, who will save me? There's no one around. Days and months passed by. So one day, he had gone to other part of the island. And when he was returning back, he saw that there was a big fire and smoke that was going sky high. And he was a little fearful. Is that my place? Is it my house? And it was. So when he was returning back, he saw his house was getting burnt. So he was cursing God that, see, my whole house is getting burnt. This was the only house I made for my survival. Now in this freezing cold winter, how am I going to survive? So when he was weeping and crying, in the meantime, a boat arrived there, in that island. And he rushed to the boat. And he said, how did you arrive here? For so many months, nobody came here. And the boat people said, we saw the smoke coming from this island. And we thought probably we can get some food here, so we came. And then they picked him up and then they took him to his land. So then this person understood how what he thought to be misfortune turned out to be good fortune for him. Similarly, we don't know why some things happen in our life. Sometimes it's beyond our ability to explain or comprehend. But if we put faith in God, that God is like all-loving, kind Father, and He knows what is best for me, then that faith will actually help you. And it will also help you to deflect misfortune from your life and turn misfortune into good fortune. It's possible. So this is formula one. Do your best and give up worry or tension about the result, understanding that God will do good to you. Understand that everything is in God's control. Then that leads to surrender to God. So leaving the rest to God means this is a way of surrender. Why I spoke so elaborately on this? Because it's very easy to say that I'm leaving the rest to God. But we are not in that platform. Many times we say that, you know, ultimately God is in control. But when God puts you in trouble, then you totally forget that. Then you start thinking, I am in control. So that is why this is a very important part of this subject to understand. So try to remember this formula. If you do your best from your side according to your capacity, by planning and by regularity, by honesty and everything, and then understand that ultimately God is in control, whatever result He gives, I will accept. Now this is not only while doing the duty, how would you receive the result? If the result is good, you can pray to God and say, thanks God, you have given me a very good result. So it's all your mercy. And if the result is not good, oh God, I don't know why I got a poor result. Probably I'll try to do better next time. I'll try to put in more efforts. I'll try to become more sincere. Ultimately, nothing can be changed. Ultimately, you are in control. So this is the platform of a devotee. A devotee never gets disturbed. In either case, in happiness and in sorrow, in success and failure, a devotee always accepts it. Now, in the subsequent slide, next one. Next. Also, another aspect of this, leaving the rest to God, is to understand what is success and failure. You see, unfortunately in the modern times, the term success is misinterpreted by people. How many people can get first rank in a class? Can everyone get? Everyone wants to get first rank. Can everyone get first rank? Only one person is going to get first rank. So, in the modern times, there's a cutthroat competition everywhere for success, success, success. And if you cannot make it, then you are considered a failure, like that. But this is not Vedic system. In Vedic system, you are allowed to identify your own value system. The guru will help you to identify your value system and live by those values which you commit to him, that I will live by these values. For example, if you are a brahmana, he will promise your guru that I will live by these values. If you are a kshatriya, you will promise him that you will live by those values. And you will be given different type of knowledge. And if you are a Vaishya, Shudra, you will be given accordingly. Everyone. So, you are not compared with others. You promise a commitment and you keep the commitment. And if you do so, then you have succeeded. You attained all success. So, now some of the schools, they are doing that. I have seen in certain schools, they are doing like this. They don't compare the children and say that you are a muff. and you are very intelligent. You have low IQ and you have high IQ. They don't do that. What they do? They identify a child's nature and the ability of the child and make the child promise according to the child's capacity. The child says, I will do these things. And if the child does, he is considered success. But unfortunately, 99.9% of the colleges and schools, they always compare people, just like is mentioned here. Everyone cannot get the first rank. So because of which, when one cannot make it, people lose. And sometimes people cannot tolerate it. Like there was one student in IIT Bombay and one student in IIT KGP also. I heard of students committing suicide. Somebody has been getting first rank in the first 3 years. And fourth year he fails in a paper. And it becomes unbearable. What will my parents think about me? What will my circle of friends talk about me? What will the world say about me? They become cowards and they just cannot face and they go and commit suicide. And it's a real story. In IIT Bombay you will hear every year a boy or a girl will always commit suicide. It's a every year event. It's a regular event because of the pressure. So, that kind of foolish idea of success people have. We think that repeatedly getting what we want is success. But not everything we want may be good for us. Success, isn't it? I want something in life and I have to keep getting it repeatedly. I should be successful in everything I do. Basically what they say is, I should get what I want. You know that advertisement which says, I get what I want. Why they put such advertisement billboards and all? Because when people see that, then they'll buy the cigarette or whatever. Because people know that they don't get what they want in life. Often you don't get what you want and you get what you don't want. Many times. And that is the definition of misery in this world. Actually, God has created this world in such a manner that at some time or the other, everyone will face inevitable failures. You will see that. Sometimes you are successful, sometimes you are a failure. All of you agree with this? Isn't it? Sometimes you are successful, sometimes you are a failure. You cannot be successful all the time. Like, you know, they showed this movie of Christ Eve, Superman. 1996 this movie was shown worldwide. So this man, you know, he comes and stands in the railway line and a high speed train is coming at 240, you know, kilometer per hour very fastly and he's keeping his hand like this, you know, boom, he's stopping the train, you know, like that, and he's climbing on the top of a big mountain and jumping from there like the Shaktiman, you know, he's jumping from there. You know. So he's doing all that and he doesn't have any fracture at all on the legs. You know. So, he did many, many miraculous things because he's supposed to behave like that. He's a Superman after all, at least in the movie. You know? So, he was doing all that. But then in 96, he actually had a fracture in the leg. In some car accident, he broke his leg and he became bedridden. And till date, he has not gotten up. He's bedridden. So, Superman is bedridden. He cannot get up. So, we have to be realistic in this world. Don't be in a dream world. Maybe in a dream world, all the time one can be getting what they want. Probably in dreams it's possible. But in the real world, this world is created in such a manner that there has to be sukh and dukkh. Sukh and dukkh are two sides of the same coin. If you get the head, you also have to get the tail. You can't say, I want only the head side. No. You will also get the tail along with that. You cannot make a mound without digging a pit. So it's very natural. So, why this world is created like that? Somebody can say, where is the mic? Anybody who has come is mixed. Just like, mic can go there, yeah. Why this world is created mixed with suffering and happiness like this? Why can't there be happiness forever?
Sir, if every time you are getting success, sir, and not failures,
yeah,
then you won't understand the importance of success.
Oh, you will not be able to enjoy the success?
You will not be able to understand the importance of success, sir.
Is it? So, there should be some failures also, is it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, let me ask you a simple question. Say, you are taking some Indian gas agency. And you are having a big shop with many, many Indian gases. And every year you are making 2 lakhs profit. Now, first year you got 2 lakhs. And next year you got 2.5 lakhs. Third year you are getting 3 lakhs. And then you got profit for 5 years. And one day you pray to God. What God, every year you are giving me success. let there be a fire accident in my company. Will they say like that ever?
No, sir.
Because, you know, all the time I am getting success, I am feeling bored with success. Let there be some fire accident, let there be some loss, so that, you know, I will be able to taste the actual success. Will you ever think like that?
No, sir. I am saying if every time you are getting 3 lakh, 4 lakh, 5 lakh, sir, then you won't calculate that thing in that manner in which you would have failed in the first time attempt, sir.
Yeah.
Like if you are getting losses, sir.
Yeah.
If getting
will you? I'm asking about you. If you are doing a business, will you not be happy every year if you are making more profit?
Yes, sir. You know, obviously you would be happy, sir.
Yeah.
But
so in the same manner, there is no one in this world who wants suffering as a part of life. Although they may say, "What to do? Suffering is a part of life. You know, we have to accept it." You know, but nobody would say that suffering is a necessary part of life in order to experience what is happiness. Huh? Suffering comes anyway in this world, so we have to tolerate it. But I am asking a question. For example, if God comes in front of you and tells you that I can allow you to go on enjoying throughout your life happily, and I will not give you suffering, you have that option. And another option is that I will give you a little bit suffering in between. Which would you choose?
So first one.
Last one, isn't it?
Yes,
thank
sir.
You very much. That's it, yeah. So anybody would agree that we all want everlasting happiness. Is it not true? We all want to go on becoming happier and happier. Nobody will desire any misfortune. Like we are boarding a train. As soon as you board a train, people sing, "Namaste Narasingaya." Hey, Narasingadev, protect me. No accident should happen. Isn't it? Nobody would say, "I have traveled in train 100 times and no accidents." Why no accidents happened to my train in which I go? I hear so many. Rajdhani Express was having accident. Huh? So we always desire good in this world. Nobody desires any misfortune in this world. We want to be happy. But as he rightly said, he made a good point that people have accepted suffering as a part of life. And they think that, you know, happiness, suffering both come in life and we have to accept it. And that is true also. But given a chance, every one of us would like to have happiness forever. But why God has kept happiness and suffering mixed in this world? The reason is very simple. Arun, you can say. Arun had a hand up. Okay, Arun. Give the mic to Arun. God wants us to return back to Him. See, if this world is a happy place, you will never want to go back to Him. You will be running here and there, all the time trying to become happy. I mean, you will be all the time enjoying the life here. You will never want to go to the kingdom of God, the spiritual world. You will always be wanting to continue in this world. And also another reason is, the soul constitutionally is a lover and servant of God in the spiritual world. So when he comes to a strange foreign place like this material world, he cannot be happy. Just like all of you have, how many of you are away from home now in Pune? Raise your hands. My Lord, a good number. 99%, okay. So you all felt homesick when you came first time? How many of you felt homesick? Almost same number, see? Yeah. So when you are away from home, you are feeling homesick. Similarly, when we are away from spiritual world, we feel Goloka sick. Yeah. We feel spiritual world sick. So we have come to this world, we are not happy because you are taken out of your element. Like if you take a fish out of water, he suffers, he is shivering and suffering. Similarly, when you take a soul away from God and tell him that you try to enjoy this world here, you can't enjoy. We always suffer. Or we may imagine that we are enjoying for some time. But we can't enjoy. Like a child who takes the hand away from the mother and father and tries to wander in the road, he will see a lorry and a bus and a car going in the street. He has an artificial sense of independence which he enjoys for a short while. But after some time he realizes, what kind of independence is that? You know, a big lorry is coming, big truck is coming, big elephant is coming. So he feels very, very threatened and fearful. He wants to immediately go back to mother and father. So that is our situation also. So, when we think that repeatedly getting what we want is success, but not everything we want may be good for us. Success is not only in getting a result you want, success is also doing a thing well and honestly. Success is not in the trophy won, it is in the race run. You heard this saying? Success is not in the trophy won, but it is in the race run. So, success also lies in doing a thing well and honestly. What this means is, sometimes you will see students who crack the exams and get very high marks. But the students in the class know that these people don't have actual understanding of the subject. You all have seen that in your class sometimes. Somebody, some or other, gets a distinction, but actually the person does not know the subject so well. But he knows the knack of getting marks. He knows to refer the previous year examination papers, university examination papers, and he can predict what question will come this time. And they crack the exam also and get very high score. But on the other hand, I have seen boys in my class itself who know the subject so thoroughly, in and out, but they get average marks. Because they spend most of the time studying foreign author books, solving problems, and they know the subject very thoroughly. But they don't know the art of cracking the marks. So, out of the two, which is better? First or second? Amazing. People are saying a loud second. First is, you don't look for the first? How many of you say first? Okay. How many of you say second? Okay. So, I would say a third option, where I know the subject well and crack the exam also. So, that's what we used to do. 3 months, like July, August, September, we would study foreign other books. And then when the PL starts, then we will go back to the previous university question papers. And then study Indian other books, you know, Kurmi, Ramamritam, and all that. You get the Indian other books and see what kind of questions will come. So, you can know the subject and also try to crack it if you can. Doing the best, then you say you can try to do both if you can. But if you cannot do both, that's why it is said, success is also doing a thing well and honestly. That means you are not copying from anybody. Honestly means whatever you know, you write. You put your best efforts. You are not carrying cheats with you or copying from somebody. Others will be debarred from the course sometimes for 2-3 years also. So success is not in the trophy won, it is in the race run. This is true even in spiritual life. What God considers success in spiritual life is not based on the result that you have accomplished. But what God sees is your effort. That is why it is said, it is not the triumph that leads one to success, but the struggle, it is said. So in the same way, it says here, it's not the trophy won, but the race ran. You all know about Jatayu, you heard of Jatayu? The Jatayu eagle, he was once lying in the tree, and at that time Ravana was carrying Mother Sita and going in the Akash Marg, and Sita was screaming and weeping. And Jatayu got up hearing the sound, and he saw the goddess of fortune, Sita, is being carried by Ravana. Immediately, Jatayu, he was an old eagle at that time, he immediately got up and started flying in the sky, and he shouted, "You rascal Ravana, you cannot escape with your life and carrying this mother of the universe, mother Sita." So he, immediately using his beaks, he killed the mules which were carrying Ravana's chariot. Immediately. He also cut off the head of the charioteer. And in this way, Ravana was practically left without chariot. And he was still flying in the Akashma, trying to carry Sita with him. And the bird started waving its wings very, very fastly, flapping over Ravana. And Ravana shouted, "Oh, old Jatayu, foolish Jatayu, don't come in my way. Otherwise you will not remain alive." And Jatayu said, "I am ready to die fighting with you, but I will not allow you to carry Sita." That was his determination. And Ravana in the meantime took his sword and started trying to cut off the wings of Jatayu. And there was a big fight that took place. In fact, Jatayu successfully, using his beak, he cut off the armor of Ravana, totally. He made him totally exposed without the armor. Without the, what do you call that? Armor? Kavach on his chest. And Ravana took his sword in hand and cut off the wings of Jatayu, right and left wing, and then Jatayu fell from the sky to the earth. And then he carried Sita and went away. In fact, it is said when Jatayu was fighting with Ravana, Jatayu also saw Mother Sita weeping. Every time he turned to Mother Sita weeping, that gave him the nourishment to fight with Ravana. Because he always desired that Mother Sita should be put back in touch with Ram. In the same way, later on when Ram comes, he comes to know that how Jatayu fought for him. Although Jatayu was apparently unsuccessful, that Rama was very pleased with him, that you fought for me. So he treated Jatayu exactly as like a father, and he performed the Antim Kriya for Jatayu, last rites he performed. So, from a material viewpoint, Jatayu was not successful. He was a failure. He was killed by Ravana. But from spiritual viewpoint, Jatayu was a very great success. How he was a success? Because Lord Ram was pleased. The goal of life is to please the Lord, and he could please the Lord. He was a success. That is why, if one is a devotee, if you are studying and you have done your best, even if you are not a distinction holder, even if you are not a first class, if you are a mediocre student, but you have done your best from your side, and you are a Krishna's devotee, you are successful in life. Because you have taken care of your material part, you have taken care of your spiritual part, ultimately you will go back to God, if you have done your best. But often our greatest worry is that many of the devotees, they don't study well, they don't do their best. The purpose of this lecture is that only, to inspire them to do their best. You cannot say, I am like Jatayu. You know, I may not be successful, still I am pleasing the Lord. You should always remember Jatayu did his best. You know the story of the sparrow who tried to dry up the ocean? He did his best. Can a sparrow dry up the ocean? Is it humanly possible? It's impossible. But the sparrow lost her eggs in the ocean, and she asked the ocean to return back the eggs, and the ocean was not ready. So she was trying to dry up the ocean drop by drop. She was trying to endeavor like that. Seeing that, then Garuda came and ordered the ocean to return back the eggs. Similarly, we should do our best. Seeing that, then the Lord's mercy will come. So, our endeavor plus Lord's mercy, a combination of these two can bring about success. So, if you have done your part well, then that is considered itself success. Also, failure is not a terrible and shameful thing. Every champion loses 100 matches before winning a big one. Often in the modern times, a failure is portrayed so badly. Often the parents are also instrumental in that many times. When, like, you know, if you are getting a first class, and then from first class you get 2% less, next time, the way you are treated, it's very, very bad. The friends and the society and the parents and all people, the way they treat you, as if you have lost everything in life. So, the failure is not such a bad thing, because failure can be taken as a stepping stone to success. It is found out in every field that those people who fail, they know about the pitfalls much, much more than those who succeed. Those people who have been always successful, they are considered not so talented, not so intelligent. But those people who have failed many times, every time they fail, they learn a lesson out of it. And they know a lot. In the games you have seen in football or volleyball, you will see those people who have failed, they will know a lot about the games. Because they will know how they failed. And next time they might have got a failure because of failing in another manner. So they learn a lot of lessons. And as it is said here, every champion loses 100 matches before winning a big one. So even if you fail in life, you should always take it in a positive spirit that failure can be a stepping stone to success. That is why it is said, success means going from one failure to another failure without losing enthusiasm. That is success. Because we are living in this material world, there can be many failures that one may face. But if one can maintain the spirit of enthusiasm, and go on hoping after hope that God will certainly guide me and put me in the right direction, then one can achieve success. So, failure is not a terrible thing, because as I told you, we have to be realistic. We are living in a world where the competition is a cutthroat competition. I told you about the CAT examination, what kind of competition it is. Or the IIT JEE or the CAT examination. Now all the exams are becoming like that everywhere. So this is not to say that you can become complacent. Don't think like that. This is not to give you an idea that you can become complacent. You have to work hard, undoubtedly. At the same time, you have to be realistic. Often what happens in countries like America, children are not taught these things. Due to which in childhood they got what they wanted always. And when they go to school or college, when they don't get what they want, they take the gun and shoot others. They shoot other children, they shoot the teacher. Nowadays in American schools, there are panic buttons, there are army people standing with machine guns in the schools. Because children are bringing weapons. They have screening devices and things like that. Why? Because the children have no control of their mind and senses. When they don't get what they want, they immediately get flared up and they cause any kind of damage to others like that. But if you know these things, this will give you the maturity to live your life peacefully, knowing that ultimately God is in control. The next. So this is formula 2. Correct understanding of what is success and what is failure. Plus, faith that God knows what is best for me. So this will give you a feeling of being blessed at all times. See, this feeling is very important. That one should have a sense of self-esteem. You know what is self-esteem? Self-esteem is opposite to inferiority complex. That if one feels inferiority complex, then one can be taken to the zone of depression. When depression is triggered up, you may take to bad habits like smoking, drinking, or even if you take pills and other things, the depression puts you in very, very low spirits. That I can never be successful, I am a failure in life. Nobody looks at me. I have no hope in life. And you may even end up in suicide. So opposite of depression is self-esteem, or self-confidence, or self-esteem. So that self-esteem is not false ego. It is not artificial pride. The self-esteem is that God has made every one of us unique, and He has given certain talents to every one of us. And He has made me also talented in some way. Just like somebody is a weightlifter, if he's looking at a person who is doing pole vault, and says that, when will I be able to jump on this pole vault? Can ever be able to pole vault? A weightlifter, he'll only break the stick if he tries to jump like that. But God has given him another talent of lifting the weight. Now if the pole vault person looks at the weightlifter and thinks, when will I be able to lift 250 pounds? He can never lift. He's a skinny man. He is meant for jumping in pole vault only. Similarly, all of us are endowed with some talent that God has given. See, when we were in school days, our teachers in moral science period, she used to tell us to make our thumb impression, in the papers. And later on she told all of us to compare our thumb impressions and the hand impressions and everything. And we found that none of us were having similar impressions. And then she asked us, what did we learn? And we couldn't say anything. And then she said, every one of you is unique. God has created you as a special person. You are unique. And we felt so nice. God has created us as a special person. He has given us some special talent. And I have some talent which somebody else doesn't have. And He has some other talent which I don't have. So, this doesn't make you proud. It only makes you feel good about yourself and also have a respect for others also. You respect everyone, that everyone is a child of God, and I have to respect everyone because they all are endowed with different talents. And God also has created me unique. So that's the meaning of feeling good about oneself. Doctors have found out that there is a gland called as hypothalamus gland. This hypothalamus gland controls the sleeping rate, breathing rate and all that. The body temperature, it controls all this. So the doctors say that the very same glands is instrumental in activating the pituitary glands, which secretes adrenaline or endorphins. What is adrenaline? Adrenaline is secreted when one is angry or fearful. Then adrenaline is hormones are secreted. And what happens as a result of that is, when adrenaline is dumped in the blood, it constricts the blood pockets and causes the pressure of the blood to rise, and it causes blood pressure. And such people are prone to heart attack and things like that. So when you become angry, when you become fearful, or when you feel depressed, such things cause adrenaline to secrete. On the other hand, those people who are cared, loved by others and who feel good about themselves, such people, they are literally bathed with endorphins. And what does the endorphins do? The endorphins, it reinforces the immunity system in the body. So one, actually, even if you have some disease, when you are cared and loved, then the disease automatically disappears. Because the immunity, the level of immunity in the body keeps rising. So adrenaline and endorphins have an opposite effect in the body. So who are the people who can feel good about themselves? Only those who are God conscious. Because when you are Krishna conscious or God conscious, you are always saying that God protects you, just like Prahlad. Prahlad must have never had the adrenaline problem. Because he was always conscious of Krishna, and he thought that Krishna is protecting me. When his father, sent soldiers to, pierce his chest, when his father made him hurl down the cliff, when his father asked the soldiers to put him in a cage of hungry lions, Prahlada was never afraid because he always saw Krishna protecting him. When his father gave him a cup of poison, he looked into the cup of poison. You know what he saw? He saw Lord Narayana lying in the Anantashesh and Goddess of Fortune Lakshmi at his feet. He saw that and he said, "My dear father, you are feeding me Amrit. Thank you very much." And he drank that poison. Just like Amrit, nothing happened to him. So, one who has a very firm faith in God, such a person has the real self-esteem and the greatest courage in heart. Such a person will never feel inferiority complex because God is always his real friend who is always protecting him. And that feeling of being blessed at all times means such a person always counts the blessings in his life. He does not find fault with his life. Why God has not given me this? Why I don't have talent like that person? No. He always counts the blessings what God has given. And he always feels gratitude towards God. Because of which? So that comes as a result of these two things. Understand what is actual success in life and failure. You see, material life means you think I am the body. And that I have to be successful in my career. Otherwise my life is finished, so I will commit suicide. Because you don't know anything beyond the body. But in spiritual life, what you understand? The first thing we teach people in spiritual life is, what is it? You are not the body. Immediately understand that even if my body doesn't succeed, no problem. I am the soul. Now I will take another body next life. So as soon as you know you are not the body, you are the soul. Half of your problem is solved. Because even if you don't succeed in your career, say let us assume that somebody doesn't emerge as a very successful person, a very brilliant person, intelligent person in this life, but he's a wonderful devotee of God. He can go back home, back to Godhead. It's possible. God doesn't say only, you know, the first rank holders can come back to spiritual world. Going to spiritual world, there is no competition. All of us can go back. There is no limitation of vacancies there. There are unlimited vacancies there. Unlike the special companies in this, multinational companies in this material world. The vacancies are not limited. So everyone can be a success. All of us can go back there. So then we understand the real success in life is to prepare oneself to go back home, back to Godhead. That is real success. But there is also a subsidiary success, which is a part of that success is also to do your prescribed duty of swadharma properly. The studies also. So your study is one of the duties, which is a, as I told in the beginning, conditional duty. And your preparation to go back to Godhead is constitutional duty. So you understand properly what is success failure, then you'll never commit suicide. Or you'll never get depression. And always have faith that God knows best, and then you'll have a feeling of blessedness. Next. Yeah. See, these are the three formulas we learned today. Do your best and give up the worry or tension about the result. How do you do that? By offering the result to God. Then that amounts to surrender to God. And the correct understanding of what is success and failure and faith in God knowing the best leads to feeling of blessedness. Now, formula 1 plus formula 2 is given in the third formula. When you surrender to God and you always count the blessings in life, then you get peace. So, if any of you want to attain peace and become free from tension, this is the method for that. Next. So, the Panchapandavas shown here, Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjun, Nakula, Sahadev, they were the greatest devotees of Krishna. 5,000 years ago, when they lived, Arjuna, amongst these Pandavas, was considered the greatest hero. You see, they always depended on Krishna for his mercy. In this world, if you depend on someone, if you say that I depend on somebody, that's considered very inferior. Then people consider that you are a useless person. But the Pandavas always depended on Krishna's mercy. So in spiritual life, to depend on God is considered glorious. It's not that the Pandavas are like parasites. They were not like parasites. In fact, they were having both character and competence. You will see in personal character, every one of them was a high-souled person. Like you see Yudhishthir Maharaj. He would never tell a lie. He would always tell the truth. For the sake of truth, he was ready to, all of them were ready to put their crowns down take off their upper garments and enter the forest. And their wife was insulted, Draupadi was insulted. And they were driven to forest and they were ready for that, just for the sake of maintaining the truth. And you know, Arjuna, he had such a high degree of self-control that once when he went to the heavenly planets, on that day Urushi was dancing and Arjuna was staring at her. And Indra noticed that. And then he told Urushi, it seems that Arjuna has fallen in love with you. And Urushi said, okay, I'll go and meet him in the evening. So she dressed herself with very beautiful dress and cosmetics and perfumes and everything. And then evening she approached Arjuna in his quarters. Then as soon as she approached Arjuna with a different attitude, Arjuna told her that I considered you my mother. I never wanted to enjoy with you. So when she gave a proposal for enjoyment, Arjuna rejected it. And Arjuna told her, long ago, in the same dynasty in which I have appeared, there was a king called Pururava. And you were with Pururava. Pururava and you were husband and wife. So when I saw you, immediately Pururava came to my mind. And I thought of you as my mother, he said. Then Urvashi told him, that's all right, but we heavenly damsels, we have the power that even after several times being enjoyed, they never lose virginity. They have such a body that they can enjoy with anybody. So she said, I can still enjoy with you. But he said, no. I have already accepted you as my mother and I cannot think of you in any other role. I can only bow down at your feet as a mother. And Urushi became very angry. She cursed him to become a eunuch. And that's how Arjuna becomes a Brihanala eunuch during the Ajnatavas period. So that curse was like a blessing in disguise. Because, you know, he was supposed to be an incognito during that year. And he became a eunuch. That was good for him. Anyway, the point we learn is, Arjuna had such a degree of self-control. All of you ask this question to yourself. A beautiful girl, well-dressed, comes to you and says, proposes to you. How many of you can say, no, I consider you like my mother. Anybody can raise a hand confidently? That a beautiful girl. Oh, really? What's her good name? Raj. Raj must be like Arjuna. Oh, there are two more hands up there. Who else? Hey, please note down these names. Probably they may want to become brahmacharis. Because only a brahmachari can see every woman as a mother. Otherwise, a person who wants to marry will see every woman as a mother except his own wife. So there were two more hands up. Who was that? Here, one more. Please tell your names loudly. So you are planning to marry or not? You haven't decided? You'll go for marriage? He's hoping for marriage. Okay. There was another hand up here. Ashwin, who is that? Ashwin, yeah. Ashwin, what is your point?
I will go to marriage.
Anyway, see, all these 4 or 5 boys who raised hand, they are not unreasonable because there are certainly people who want to live a religious life, pure life. There are certainly boys, I have also seen boys, who certainly feel that there is something wrong. You know, properly before settling in life and married life, you know, you can't, you know, indulge in such a relationship like this 4 or 5 of them. See, we have to appreciate their honesty to be so courageous in a big assembly to raise their hands and speak up. So all of you give them a big applause. Anyway, Arjuna was like that, having a very great self-control. And similarly, we can say about every one of them, they were all high souls. So in character, they were very high. And what about their competence? Arjuna was... So in the next slide, you will see the competence of Arjuna. Show that. Next. So Arjuna actually was one of the best students of Dronacharya. Dronacharya had many, many students, but Arjuna was the best. And Drona really loved him. You know what Dronacharya would do? Dronacharya would tell all the Pandavas and other students that all of you take this pot, go to the riverside and bring, fetch some water and bring. And all of them would go to the riverside. And then he would call his son, Ashwatthama, and teach him some special skills. You know what Arjuna would do? He would take an arrow and pierce the ground. and the water would come and fill up the pot and say, "Oh, Acharyaji, already water is ready here. Please teach me also what you are teaching your son." So, and Dronacharya would happily teach him. And Drona told him one day that, "I can teach you something better than what I am teaching my son. I am so pleased with you as my student." And one day, Dronacharya wanted to show his other students how great is Arjuna. He entered into waters and put his leg purposely into the mouth of a crocodile. And he shouted, "Help, help," he shouted. And all the Pandavas, they were frozen. And Pandavas and Kauravas, they were all frozen and they were standing and they didn't know what to do. Arjuna immediately took a bow and arrow and sent it straight on the neck of the alligator and cut off its neck. And Dronacharya came out of the waters and immediately embraced Arjuna and said, "Arjuna, you are the greatest warrior I have ever seen. Today I bestow upon you the Brahmastra. What do you think is Brahmastra?" He gave him the Brahmastra. How to send Brahmastra. And he told him, "Never use this unless there is absolutely need for using it, because it can cause the destruction of the whole universe." So he gave him such a weapon like that. Next. And Arjuna was also most loved by Bhishma Pitama. Of course, Bhishma Pitama loved all the Pandavas. And when Bhishma was lying in the arrow bed, when he wanted water, so many people brought pots of water and gave him. He said, "No. You call Arjuna," he said. And they are wondering why he is calling for Arjuna. He didn't accept water from anybody. When Arjuna came, he asked Arjuna, "Arjuna, can you give me water?" And he knew how Arjuna will give him water. He sent an arrow on the ground and then the water straight went into the mouth of Bhishma Pitama. And he drank only that water. He loved him very much. So Arjuna had such talents that he would invest mantras in a bow and he would send the arrow which could put holes in every leaf of a tree. He had that type of talents. Many, many talents he had. He had celestial weapons and he was the best archer. Next. Yeah, next. Next one. You know this, isn't it? How Arjuna got the hand of Draupadi. Next. By hitting the eye of the fish. Although many, many of them tried, none of them could hit, but Arjuna could. So in this way, Arjuna and the other Pandavas, they were very great in competence. And they are very great in character also, in both ways. But still they depended on Lord Krishna. Next, that's all? Yeah. So Arjuna, like this Pandavas, you see, they loved Krishna so much that they did not desire anything in the world other than Krishna. You will find Lord Krishna also loved them very much. Amongst the Pandavas, it is said, Krishna chose Arjuna for speaking Bhagavad Gita. Do you know why? Because Arjuna was the most intimate friend and devotee of Krishna. It is said one day, during the Mahabharata war, Krishna left his tent and was walking in the dead of the night. And all the Pandavas also got up and they followed Krishna. And they were wondering, where is Krishna going? And Krishna entered into the tent of Arjuna. And then all the Pandavas were peeping from the holes to see what Krishna is doing. And Krishna entered the tent of Arjuna and sat at the feet of Arjuna and started massaging Arjuna's feet. And Yudhishthira told Bhima, "Just see, the Lord is massaging Arjuna's feet." And the Lord, using His divine hands, He was touching the wounds that were in the body of Arjuna. And as soon as the Lord touched the wounds, immediately the wounds disappeared. The Lord was disappearing the wounds by touching. And slowly, Bhima crawled inside the tent and went close to Krishna and asked, "My dear Lord, what are you doing? You are sitting at the feet of Arjuna and tears are coming from your eyes, falling at Arjuna's feet. What are you doing?" Lord said, "Shh, don't make any noise." He said, "Arjuna is sleeping." Then the Lord took Bhima's ears and put it at the feet of Arjuna and said, "Try to attentively hear what you are hearing." And when he heard, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna," like that he heard. Every realm of Arjuna's body was chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna like that. And the Lord told Bhima, "Now you put your ears on Arjuna's forehead and see." And he did. And again he heard Krishna, Krishna chanting. Then the Lord told Bhima, "Just see, Arjuna, he is all the time calling my name. How can I peacefully sleep in my tent? That's why I came here," he said. "So Arjuna is constantly thinking of me. He is such a great devotee of mine. That's why Lord Krishna chose Arjuna to speak Bhagavad Gita." In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, "Bhakto sime sakha cheti rahasyam hetaduttamam My dear Arjun, because you are my bhakta and sakha, you are my devotee and friend, I am speaking this Bhagavad Gita knowledge to you. The Lord said that. And you all know how once when Duryodhana and Arjuna went to the Dwaraka, when Krishna was sleeping at that time in Dwaraka. This story is so famous in India, everyone knows that. But the moral behind the story is most important. Where did Arjuna sit? Near the feet of Krishna. And where did Duryodhana sit? Near the head he was sitting. So when Krishna got up, he first saw Arjuna and then he saw Duryodhana. And Krishna understood why they have come. He said, both of you are my relatives and I want to help both of you. And the Lord said, on one hand, I am ready to come, but mind you, I will not carry any weapons with me. I am planning to leave all my weapons behind in Dwaraka and I will come alone with empty hands. On the other side, there is Narayana Sena. You both choose one out of the two, he said. And immediately Duryodhana said, my dear Lord, those people who are moralists, they always follow the law codes of the scriptures. And Krishna, you are the best among all people, all men. I know that you will certainly follow the law codes. And it was me, Krishna, who came first. So you should allow me to make the first choice, said Duryodhana. And Krishna smiled and said, you see, Duryodhana, according to the scriptural tenets, one who is junior in age, he should be given the first choice. He should be given the opportunity to make the first choice. Let Arjuna make the choice. Arjuna is younger to you, he said. And Duryodhana was not so happy, but anyway he tolerated. And he was waiting with bated breath, what choice Arjuna is going to make. And Arjuna, without any hesitation, quickly he said, Krishna, I want you, he said. And Duryodhana was relieved immediately. And he could not even conceal his joy. And he told Krishna, okay Krishna, what can I do now? Now I am left behind with Narayana Sena, I will accept it, he said. Bye-bye, he said and went away. And after he went, Krishna asked Arjuna, Arjuna, why did you choose me? I already told you that I will not even lift a weapon. But then Arjuna said, no, my dear Lord, I know whichever side you take, that side will emerge victorious. In fact, Arjuna was such an intimate friend of Krishna. That was the same time when Arjuna requested Krishna that, you are a close friend of mine, can you please ride my chariot? And the Lord very gladly volunteered to be chariot of Arjuna. And Arjuna said, you ride my chariot and you guide me. Whatever you tell me, I will do. That's all. You know what it literally means? It literally means handing over the reins of your life to God. By handing over the chariot to God. He gave it to Krishna and said, Krishna, whatever way you will guide me in my life, I will follow you. This was the platform of Arjuna. And you see, it is said, Jayastha Panduputrana, Yesham Pakshe Janardana, it is said. Because wherever Jayastha Panduputrana, Panduputra is the Pandavas. In the Pandava side, Lord Krishna remained and he guided them and they emerged victorious. They were 5 and Kauravas were 100. But still the Pandavas emerged victorious because Krishna was always on their side. So here we see Arjuna, he chose Krishna, the energetic Lord, and Duryodhana chose the energies of the Lord. So we have to decide, do we want Shaktiman or we want Shakti? So Krishna is the energetic and the Narayana Sena represents the energies of the Lord. Which means there are many people in this world, they want money, they want land, they want to enjoy life, they want to be successful and eat, drink and be merry. They all are followers of Duryodhana. They all want the energies of the Lord. And devotees of God, what do they want? They want Krishna. They want the energetic Lord. See, when you get Krishna, you get everything. You get everything because all the energies are also included in Krishna. So when we return back to the spiritual world, then we get everything there. Lord provides us everything. Even in this world, if the Lord wants to provide His devotee, He will provide everything, just like He did for Sudama. Sudama did not ask anything from the Lord. He never went to Lord and told, my dear Lord, you are having 16,000 palaces, why don't you give me one at least? No. He never asked, you are so rich, I am so poor. He never asked for anything. He made no demands. But still Krishna gave him a big palace for his own devotee. So a devotee never makes any demands from the Lord. Nadanam najanam na sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishware bhavatad bhakti rahetu kitvai. A devotee simply wants to become a ahaituka bhakta of the Lord. And that way, the Lord protects his devotee just like a mother protects a child in this manner. So I said three things about Arjuna. One is Arjuna's high degree of self-control. And number two, how Arjuna performed his prescribed duty so perfectly by being under Dronacharya. You all know the famous story of Arjuna's concentration, isn't it? How he could concentrate on the eye of the bird and hit it. So Arjuna was very perfect in his material duties. And thirdly, he was also a lover of God. He was a very intimate friend of Krishna. So these three things we see in Arjuna. He had a high degree of self-control. He performed his material duties perfectly. He performed his spiritual duty perfectly. Similarly, all of you have to follow the four regulative principles. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. Then you will gain self-control by that. And what is your material duty? Your studies. Initially it is material duty, but when you become a proper devotee, then that also becomes your spiritual duty. And one becomes a devotee. And thirdly, your devotion to God, the chanting of the holy names of the Lord every day. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So all of you, if you regularly chant every day, your minimum number of rounds, 2 rounds, 4 rounds, 16 rounds, whatever, and follow the four regulative principles, then you are following your spiritual duties and sense control properly. And then you have to do your college studies, your conditional duties properly, so that your parents will be happy, your friends will be happy, and you can also get a good job. You can settle in a good job, so that, you see, if you don't study well now, it leads to many, many problems. Later on, when the campus interview comes, you know, you don't have a first class, you don't get a job, and then you have to, you know, carry your Beretta and run from company to company, trying for a job. When you go and seek a job, they give you a job for 2,500 rupees or 3,000 rupees salary. And you have to work for, you know, 12 hours, 14 hours, and you get very little salary like that. Or sometimes they may post you in some remote place. You don't have choice of jobs. They'll post you in some Patala Ganga, Reliance, far away. So you will not be with devotees. You will have to go to some remote place. But if you get a high score, good score now, study well, work hard, then you may have a choice of few jobs in hand. You know, like just this afternoon I got a call from, you know, this Kapil, you know, IIT Kharagpur. So he told me he got in Bharat Forge, you know, which is very close to temple. But then he wasn't very happy with the salary. He also got in Tata Motors. And he said Tata Motors is placing him in Jamshedpur. So he rejected the job. He said, I don't want it. Then I asked him, what are you going to do? He said, more companies will come, Prabhuji, I'll see. He said, or I'll come to Pune and then take up a job later. He said, very cool, because he's topper in the class, you know. He can take up jobs anytime he wants. And he can have any choice of jobs he wants, you know. So, some of you have a good chance to become toppers because God has given you good brains. And if you put in effort, then you can really be toppers in the class. Some of you can be distinction holders, some of you can be first class. And if some of you feel that you are a mediocre student, you can't make much. You see, Tata made a very intelligent statement, he said. If you aim at the sky, he said, you will reach the treetop. If you aim at the treetop, you will be at least safe on the ground, he said. But if you aim at the ground, you will be buried, he said. So don't be buried. So don't aim very low. Aim high, study well. Aiming high means what? Do your best. That's all. You can do your best. Ultimately, thing rests in God's hands. You do your best. Just like Arjuna did the best. You will see that. So I request all of you, now the submissions are starting now, and then subsequently PLs will come. Put in the best of your efforts. Study nicely, get good scores, get settled well in life, so that you can have a good job that pays you well, and your Krishna consciousness can go on very peacefully. Lifelong you can practice very wonderfully. Thank you very much.